Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Welcome back to the show. Vice President Kamala Harris is now the expected nominee for president. She'll be the second woman and first of color to receive a major political party's nomination for president. I've noticed that there are some reactions to her candidacy that are a little bit different than I've seen with male candidates, and it's very reminiscent of the Hillary Clinton run. And I want to talk a little bit about why there's this different way that people, women and men, view female candidates. With us to discuss this is Dr. Alice Eagley, a social psychologist and professor of psychology emerita with the Institute for Policy Research at our very own Northwestern University. She's published on this issue, she speaks about it, and she's the co-author of the book Through the Labyrinth, The Truth About How Women Become Leaders. Welcome to the show, Dr. Eagley. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. My partner, Patrick Dolan, is with me, and we were just talking all week long, kept coming into each other's offices and saying, why is Kamala being treated differently? Can you give us your explanation of the general ways that women in politics are treated differently?
Well, these are fascinating times. But what we see is reminiscent of gender stereotypes in general, what people think about women and men. You know, we tend to think that women are the nicer, kinder sex, and then men are the tougher, more assertive sex. And so that colors the way we see political leaders. So we kind of expect Kamala Harris to be, you know, compassionate and kind in many of her policies. Tough, yes, but not too tough. And so when she gets outside of that territory, that would be perhaps problematic, because men are allowed and expected to be tough and take charge. So a woman is in a little bit more complicated position than as a political leader.
So let's just talk about competency, because there's competency, there's style, and all different things that people view, the different lenses through which people view political candidates. Right. How are women viewed from a competence standpoint that might be different than the way men are viewed?
Well, actually, in terms of public opinion polls, there's some good news there for women. It used to be that women were seen as generally less competent, but that's disappeared over the years. And there's even a slight edge. If you just ask about which sex is more intelligent or more competent, there's really a slight edge in favor of women now. And so Kamala would benefit from that. I don't think people in general think she's not smart or able to understand issues. Quite the contrary. I think she would fare well in public opinion vis-a-vis Trump in terms of her sheer competence. And then her background, of course, of having been a senator and an attorney general, etc. She has a strong history of competence. So I think that's not quite the issue, sheer competence.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. Doctor, let me follow up on that point, because a little bit earlier you said, you know, you talked about toughness and the difference that people may perceive in terms of male and female leaders.
Right.
So, you know, Kamala Harris was a district attorney in the Bay Area. She was Attorney General of California. She was a U.S. Senator.
Yeah.
She was a vice president. So she's had years and years of prosecutorial experience where she has put criminals in jail. Do you think, you know, when you're talking about female leaders in politics, that sort of background buttresses the notion that women are not as strong as men in leadership positions?
Well, I think it's good that she has that background, and so that gives her personally more of a claim to assertiveness of having been a prosecutor, and evidently a successful one. So I think that's a plus in her personal background, because the vulnerability of women would be more on the side of, well, they can't really take charge, they won't be tough enough in a crisis, etc. So I think that protects her to some extent, her personal history.
There's something I was reading about, Doctor, that is called strategic discrimination, where people don't vote for women because they say to themselves, they're not electable, therefore I'm not going to waste my vote on a female. Does that still go on, or is that a thing of the past?
Well, I think that there's possibly a small effect of that sort, but it would be a misperception.
Right.
Because once men and women run for office, they're about equally likely to win. Like their data, particularly on the U.S. Congress, it's equal. But the reason then, well, why do we have only 25% women in the U.S. Congress? The reason is more in getting women to run. Women are less likely to run for a political office than men. But once they do, it, in modern data, it tends in general not to be a disadvantage.
We're talking to Dr. Alice Eagley. She is a social psychologist and professor at the Institute for Policy Research at Northwestern. Dr. Eagley, are women... Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just adding, and the psychology department.
And the psychology department.
Right.
Are women more likely or less likely to be critical of women who are running for office? What does your research show?
Well, critical, I guess the bottom line is voting, right?
Yes.
And so the data are very mixed. You might think, well, of course, women would vote more for women. And, you know, in some elections, that is the case. But in others, it's not. So it tends to be very mixed. And there's no real truth in the idea that women are a lot more likely to vote for women than men are, because it's really, you know, political party is the main consideration rather than gender, it looks like, in our American elections.
So Hillary Clinton got the popular vote in 2016, and the fact that she did, does that help the cause or hurt the cause, or is it neutral? The fact that we have had a woman, you know, get a substantial amount of votes, does that create a path that makes it easier for women, or is it not matter?
I think it's helpful because, you know, as you said, she won the popular vote. And in many ways, she's widely regarded as having been a somewhat like flawed candidate. You know, there was the Whitewater scandal and various other rumors, and that she came up by being married to a president. So she had some features that, you know, would work against her, I think, and that Kamala Harris, you know, does not have. So I think it was helpful because people realized, well, there are certain complexities that are specific to Hillary Clinton that did harm her. There's the email controversy, remember
right.
all that?
Right.
So there's a lot of things going on there that were very particular to that election.
What about,
I think it's helpful. Still, she did well.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, she did. What about political party? I mean, you know, going back to the issue of some perceive as a lack of toughness in female candidates, is it less likely that a conservative Republican female would be perceived as less tough? I mean, when you're looking at world leaders historically in Europe, Margaret Thatcher, for example, was very well
yes.
received by a lot of people in this country.
The Iron Lady,
yes,
right. And you obviously had a chancellor in Germany for a long time. Who's a female.
Yes.
And so in this country, are we more apt to, you know, want to elect a Republican woman over a Democrat because of the perception that she'd be more tough?
Oh, I don't know. I think that the perception of toughness, I think it might override party. I'm not sure. I wouldn't confidently predict that. I think the examples of women rising to be head of state in Europe are different because the political system is different.
Right.
You have to rise to the top of your party, and then the party wins the election, right? So it's a parliamentary system, which I think made it more likely for women to get the top office than in the United States with direct election.
That does make sense, that it's a whole different system. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about specifics of Kamala Harris and what advice you might give her. We're here with Dr. Alice Eagley, and we're here with Patrick Dolan on WGN. Welcome back. We're here with Dr. Alice Eagley. She is an expert on the issue of how women are perceived in the workplace. And Dr. Eagley, I assume that a lot of the same things that we're talking about are applicable to the corporate world. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah, that's true. We talk about women becoming CEOs or not.
So this issue of women not being perceived as being tough, I read somewhere that people perceive women, when it comes to politics, as being more adept in the area of like healthcare, social policies, things like that, as opposed to foreign affairs. Is that still true?
Well, I don't know about adept, but I think people assume there's more commitment to the social issues, children and healthcare, et cetera, on the part of women, and then like the military and foreign affairs on the part of men, that they would be more committed or interested in those issues. Whether they're adept or not is whether it works out well, their policies. But that would be the gendering, that works back to gender stereotypes, where women are the kinder, nicer sex, and men are the tougher sex, et cetera. And so there is the assumption that that would also be true in politics.
Given all the things that you know about how women are perceived in politics, what advice would you give to Kamala Harris?
Aha. Well, I think she's doing well with presenting herself, because in the study of gendered leadership, we talk about the double bind, and that a woman could easily be too masculine and therefore get a kind of a backlash. Nancy Pelosi has gotten some, backlash because she's tough. But on the other hand, she could be too kind and compassionate and not tough enough, right?
Right.
So it's the double bound. So finding that middle ground is very important, I think, for women who are vying for public office. So, being tough in your arguments and taking clear stances, but also reassuring people that you're also a woman and somewhat feminine, right? And certainly Kamala Harris smiles quite a lot and laughs in a very spontaneous, pleasant way. And I think that's kind of helpful because those are feminine nonverbals, And so they kind of, the way she presents herself is as tough but feminine in some ways. And I think that's the middle ground that's advantageous for women.
And it's interesting because I've heard pundits, say she laughs too much and inappropriately. But, I think it's, I look at Hillary Clinton, who I've met and I've spent time with one-on-one, who is a very pleasant, very funny, very charming woman. But when she puts herself in front of a microphone, she just doesn't come across that way. And, she could have done with a little bit more smiling, I think, right?
Absolutely. I think she was rather serious always. And I think that was to her disadvantage. She probably didn't want to seem very feminine, but I think it's good to seem somewhat feminine, but not too much. And I think that Kamala Harris is more in that middle ground than Hillary Clinton was, and that would be an advantage.
I have seen a lot of comments that are disturbing to me, that she's a DEI hire, that she slept her way to the top. And I just hear these things that, it's disturbing when you hear those things. What is the purpose? What is going on when you hear those comments? Is it kind of to sexualize the woman, to kind of take her down a notch? Is that the purpose?
Well, I think it is a way of attacking her. But it's a little bit ludicrous, right? Because, how many sexual partners do we think Donald Trump might have had? And that she might have had one with another politician. So what? But
right.
So it's a way to denigrate women as if they should be more, pure or sexually restrained than men. So we can take that as just a form of sexism.
And, you know, the childless cat lady comment that J.D. Vance made, you know, I see it now. A few people are saying about Kamala Harris, you know, she doesn't have any children. Well, she's got stepchildren, and that's children, in my view, in my book. That's, you're a parent. And, but again, what is the purpose there? To kind of take away her femininity? Because, you know, the ultimate act is, you know, to...
to make her less acceptable to the average American, where, you know, having children is seen as being a very good thing. And that she has not. And the childless cat lady fits in. Somehow Democrats are more likely to be childless cat ladies. It's a rather bizarre comment, but it seems to have gotten attention.
Yeah.
But these are ways of attacking her in particular. Yeah.
Do you have any assessment as to what physical appearance plays in running for office for women? I saw an article that came across my news feed that talks about how women in the workplace, it's good to be pretty, but not too pretty, because that works against you. What do you know about that, Professor?
Well, in general, physical attractiveness is a positive. There's a whole literature of studies on what is beautiful is good, because somebody who is good looking is thought to be, in many ways, a better, nicer person. So it should be an advantage, but I think we have to think about the nuances of physical attractiveness. So it would not be good for a political candidate to have more of a sexy, you know, provocative female appearance. But to be nice looking, I think, is an advantage, because that would be a positive. Similarly for men, although it's probably not as important for them, but, you know, like John Kennedy was a handsome man, and I think, you know, he came up quickly, and I think that was a plus in his career that he was so good looking.
Interesting.
Yeah, so
and I think there's like a presidential look. It's like that full head of hair with a little bit of gray on the side.
Yeah.
And, you know,
a lot of male presidents didn't have that look. But I think if they do, it's like a plus. But still, a woman, you know, like Kamala Harris is a nice looking woman, but in, you know, a kind of a dignified way. And that's ideal. And for a candidate, I think.
Do you have any assessment of Nikki Haley? Her campaign, because I thought that she acquitted herself well. I thought she was she had great presence. She had great qualifications, running against Donald Trump is a difficult task.
Yeah.
But what do you think of her presence in the political arena?
I think she did well, given the situation she was in. After all, there was no doubt that Trump would win. He had, you know, such a head start over her, but she got attention, she got quite a bit of support, and I think she did present herself in a positive way, a positive role model for women in politics. But I think she, nonetheless, I was so happy to have her there and see her doing as well as one might expect for a candidate going up against Donald Trump.
Dr. Alice Eagley, just one final question before we let you go for the day. What advice would you give women who aspire to leadership roles in corporate America? I know your book is Through the Labyrinth, and it's not, you don't talk about a glass ceiling, you talk about a labyrinth. And I think what you're saying, if I'm not mistaken, is that it's a labyrinth, meaning it's not the glass ceiling that keeps people down, it's the stuff right from the beginning that works against some women.
Yeah, the glass ceiling is kind of wrong-headed, as if women and men had equal careers and equal chances, but way up there at the top, somehow something happens. And, of course, that's not the way it works, so that women have career challenges that are different from those of men all the way through. And so the labyrinth is the notion that, hey, there's challenges all along, and so it's good for women to be aware of them, what they might be, and how think about how to respond. So being smart and observant and willing to turn around and try again. That's how you get through a labyrinth, right? You have to be thoughtful. You have to anticipate what's going on. And you have to be not easily discouraged. That is persistent. So I think those are qualities by which women have greatly increased their political power. You know, women are about 25% of the Congress now. In 1950, a year I remember, there were 10 women in the United States Congress. 10. And now it's 25%. So we've got to acknowledge this progress, and it's those women, you know, going ahead, even though there might be prejudice, there are hazards, but going ahead and being persistent and smart about, you know, their candidacy.
Doctor,
being ambitious, let me add that.
Be ambitious. Be ambitious and persistent. Dr. Alice Eagley, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Alice Eagley, a social psychologist, professor of psychology, Institute for Policy Research at Northwestern, and co-author of the book Through the Labyrinth, The Truth About How Women Become Leaders. Thank you so much for joining us.